My name is Ellie Kemper. And I feel thrilled about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
Fall is here, hear the yell. Back to school, ring the bell. Brand new shoes, walking blues. Climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hello, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I am the aforementioned Conan O'Brien, here with two of my quote friends. I'll put them in quotes. Sonam Obsession, nice to see you, Sona.
What? Why are we quote friends?
Well, you know, just it gives me a level of security, knowing that it could go either way. And we got Matt Gourley in da house with us. How are you, Matt?
Quote hello.
Yes, quote hello. How are you guys?
Pretty good.
Okay, you said in da house, like D-A?
Yeah. Isn't that? No. I need to constantly show that I have street cred. Because everything about me screams no street cred.
But that's street cred from about 25 years ago.
It doesn't matter to me.
Okay.
Yeah. He still raises the roof.
I still raise the roof. Erica Brown,
yeah,
who works at the show,
yeah,
is constantly telling me, you cannot raise the roof, Conan.
Yeah.
No one raises the roof anymore. And she says it with great authority.
You still do it.
I want any kind of street cred. And if my street cred is circa 1984, I'll take it.
When's the last time you pumped up the jams?
Oh, my God. I did that this morning.
Okay.
I pumped up the jam, pump it up, pump it up, pumped up the jam, pump it up, pump it up. Doesn't matter to me what era street cred I get. If it's 23 Skidoo street cred from 1938, I'll take it.
That was, you know, street cred back then?
Yeah.
I think so. Hey, 23 Skidoo there.
Don't mess with that person.
Don't mess with him. He's a badass. He just said 23 Skidoo. I will take any era of street cred. I don't care.
All right. That's cool.
Yeah.
You're really cool. You're a really cool guy.
You don't think I'm cool at all, do you?
I think you could be cool. I think you try to be cool and then you stop yourself from being cool.
I don't want to be cool. No one wants me. And also, you know what? No one wants me to be cool. That's the other thing. They just don't want it.
Let's give it a shot. What if you sincerely tried right now to be cool? What would it be like?
I don't know. Be like me not caring too much.
Your voice changed.
I mean, that kind of works for me.
I don't care. Hey, I don't care if it works for you or it doesn't. This is my energy now. I'm just, fuck it. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm down with this guy. I like this guy
too. Yeah.
I'm not even going to try. Why don't I try?
Cool.
You know what? I don't know. I just women are fascinated by me because I just don't care about them.
No, you ruined it. You ruined it. Cool guys don't say women are fascinated by me.
No, they don't. No.
You know what makes me sexy? I just don't fucking care, man.
No, you're ruining it.
Hey, Conan, we're late for sixth period. We better get going.
You guys go ahead. I'm going to chill out here in the yard.
The yard?
Yeah. Smoke another bone.
A bone?
And I'm going to roll these dice. You guys go ahead.
I used to think that Conan guy was so cool, but he's so weird.
Tell the teacher I said, hey, daddy-o.
Who rolls dice by themselves? He's just going to roll it and pick it up and roll it again?
I play dice solitaire. Pretty cool guy. Yeah, you guys go ahead. Go to class, whatever. Tell the teacher I said, what's new, 23 Skidoo? I'm out here smoking my J-bone, my jazz cigarette, and I got these dice that I'm going to roll by myself.
Hey, Sonan, who's that 58-year-old guy playing dice solitaire in the yard?
I don't know, but he really wants to be cool, and it's just...
I don't want to be cool. I just am. I got a feather in my cap. I've got this Belgian cap. I've got leather pants. I've got big puffy sneakers.
Puffy sneakers? What? You're just wearing slippers.
Yeah, they're Uggs. I'm wearing these Uggs, and I've got Uggs from 15 years ago, and I've got leather pants, and I'm playing dice by myself and smoking a joint that looks like it was made probably right after World War II. And I've got a feather in my cap, And I don't give a shit about what class you guys are in or what's happening.
Yeah.
What do I care?
Yeah, who cares about American history, right?
Well, actually, I passionately care.
No, Conan, you got to stay with it.
No, I don't care.
Stop it, yeah.
I think America is history.
Yeah. You know?
Like, whatever, it's over.
If I told you then that Edwin Booth killed Abraham Lincoln, what would you say?
I'd probably start to get mad, but then remember I'm not supposed to care. And I'd quickly regain my senses and be cool again. I'm very cool. That's why women are so attracted to me.
Fascinated with you.
Fascinated with me. I know. It's because I just don't care.
I think they're fascinated with you like a scientist is to like a Petri dish.
Women are like, what is that? How does that work? I must find out more.
I like that the kryptonite to your cool is us giving out misinformation about American history.
Well, that's just bullshit. Edwin was a great Shakespearean actor. And
no, Conan, no.
I don't care which booth it was.
There you go.
I don't care if Lincoln was shot by a phone booth.
Yes. Yeah. See, that's cool.
Yeah. Who's this guy? Wow, he's fascinating.
Yeah. I don't know that the booths are from Maryland.
Oh, man.
Oh,
no,
let's go.
Now
let's
we know you do. We know you do.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We have a wonderful show. Wonderful show. Hosted by maybe the coolest, sexiest guy who just doesn't give a shit in all the business. My guest today is a very funny actress who has starred in such shows as The Office and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And in the hilarious movie Bridesmaids, now you can see her in the new Disney Plus movie, Home Sweet Home Alone. I am thrilled. She's with us today. Ellie Kemper, welcome.
Wanted to be on your podcast for a very long time.
Well, first of all, as you know, it's a very long line to get on this podcast.
It is.
Meghan Markle's been waiting to be on the podcast for 2 years, and there just isn't time. I know. We've got to talk to Abe Vigoda's son. I've got to talk to Mickey Rooney's attorney. There's a long line, and you've got to respect that. But Ellie, I want to start right away by letting people in on the fact that you and I have a special relationship because, mm-hmm. And this is not even a humble brag. This is a brag.
Yep.
But I took you under my wing when you were very young.
Yeah.
And gave you the honor, the high honor of being an intern on my show who worked for free.
Yep.
One of the highest honors that can be bestowed on anybody. And we all know that is the gateway into show business.
Yes. Well, you might be joking a little, but you're not wrong. Look at all the people who have thrived in show business after interning for you.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people from The Office.
Yeah, John Krasinski.
Mindy Kaling. John
Krasinski was an intern. Mindy Kaling. Angela Kinsey.
Mm-hmm.
We've had... a lot of people don't know Sir Ian McKellen was an intern on the show in 95 to 98. And guess what?
Yep.
Total asshole. We'd send him on coffee
runs. That doesn't surprise me.
We'd send him on coffee runs and he wouldn't even come back. And then he would come back and he'd be wearing a robe and there'd be no coffee. And he'd say, "You shall not pass." And he'd be like, "What? We just want coffee." "You shall not pass." No, we had, and it's so funny because I don't remember. Were you a good intern? Be honest, and be honest, because some people think of themselves as a good intern, and I don't remember. I don't recall.
Right. I again, not humble bragging, just now bragging. I was a good intern. Well, first of all, let me just be clear. I was 25 years old, which is a little old to be an intern, that's how old I was.
That is ancient for being an intern.
Oh my God.
It's embarrassing.
No, for an intern. I'm not being mean. You are a very young and attractive person to this day. I am just saying the average intern. I mean,
he's 19, is in college.
I think Krasinski was 11 when he was an intern. And he was the exact same height that he is today. He was just this giant ape of a child.
Yeah. Well, do you want to know that? So my younger sister, Carrie, who's 4 years younger than I am, she essentially got me the gig because she was an intern for you before I was. So she knew Aaron Cohen, if you remember that name.
Yep, I do.
And so he's who I interviewed with. And she put in a good word. She might, well, at that time, I guess she was 21-year-old sister, put in a good word for me. And I think that's how I got, well, I was about to say the job, but it was more a volunteer job.
Yeah, I guess, it's not a, pay. I mean, we didn't pay, no money changed hands, but I would have guessed you'd be a really good intern. And I don't know, did we have any interactions? Did you ever see me, did I ever explode at you and say, don't look at me, I'm a celebrity.
I did not have that many interactions with you, in fact. We rode up on the elevator a few times with Deb Shaw, yep. who used to do costumes for you. And there, I seem to have run into you in the costume, I don't know, station?
I used to go there a lot and dress as a woman. I was often, it made me comfortable. I would go there and dress as Carmen Miranda. I'd put fruit on my head. I always liked things with a bare midriff. But I spent a lot of time in the costume room. I did. Yeah, I thought it made me feel very happy. I don't know.
That's where I saw you. I saw you like twice, and both times were there.
Yeah.
And I am diligent. I'm a good student. I was a good intern. There was one time I mixed up a lunch order. We were in the Simon and Schuster building. I know. Your offices were being redone.
Yes, they were redoing our offices to put even more paintings of me on the wall that at my insistence.
I found
3 square inches where there was no depiction of me on the wall, and I lost it. And so they moved us to a building next door, the Simon & Schuster building. So we were in a different, I remember that era well. So you would have been an intern there. Yep. And I'm glad you have no stories of me, you know, behaving insanely. That's good.
Nothing explosive. Nothing insane. And there was, I think I was still an intern when I got to be in a sketch with you where Andrew Weinberg wrote this, where I...
You keep referencing people that no one cares about. You're like, I remember I was writing on an interview up the elevator with you and Deb Shaw, right, ladies and gentlemen? I love Deb Shaw. Shout out to Deb Shaw. But you've got to stop mentioning these people. I mean, you know.
I keep thinking this is just a little FaceTime with you, Conan. Like a FaceTime call. But I'll stop. I'll only name huge names from
only
now
name,
on.
Or if you're going to name, instead of Weinberg, just say like, it was you, me, and Elton John. And we were on the elevator. And we were each holding boiled eggs that we got at the commissary. Like,
That's a story.
That's a story that's going to really pop.
Resonate. People will know exactly who I'm talking about, and they will be in awe. But I got to be in a sketch. Now that I'm actually thinking about it, I did not interact with you that much. But that's appropriate. You're the host of the goddamn show. Yeah, I mean, what's a little lowly intern going
to
be walking?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I still think it's inappropriate that you're speaking to me.
That's why I went. You saw me 8 minutes late. I'm sweating.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that.
Well, we can get into that.
Well, we're
going to
get into that right now, Ellie Kemper.
I know.
So
I know.
Everybody is on time, you know, because
I know that
everybody is on time. So today I come in and I sit down and I say, oh, okay. And we're waiting around a little bit, and then it's time, and then it's past time, and then more waiting. And, you know, I time the cocaine so it really peaks at the key moment, and I'm starting to come down from the coke, from all the blow, and then you show up.
The blow.
Then you show up late. But you said there was traffic, a lot of traffic.
Everyone, so I'm speaking to you from Sweet NYC. Mm-hmm. We all know it's 3 hours later here. I'm assuming you're in LA.
I can't say where I am for security reasons.
You're not. You're not you're in a different time.
No, it's in the South Pacific. It's an island in the South Pacific that I own. That used to belong to the military, and then the Google guys owned it, and then I bought it from them. So that's all you need to know.
That's all. No more questions about that.
Yeah.
But I, this is dramatic. I got out of the car and ran because I could see we weren't getting anywhere. And so I was faster on foot than in a car. I think everyone bought a car since the pandemic because no one wants to ride public transit. And so, I mean, that's what my driver and I decided as we were stuck in traffic. That everyone bought a car.
There's been traffic in Manhattan, I think, since 1928.
Yeah, I think you're
there
right.
There are people stuck in traffic that have been there since shortly after World War I. And they've been in the same traffic jam, and they keep deciding, should I get out and walk? I'll give it a little longer. And then their jawbone falls off. But that happens all the time.
I had to be at your show when I was an intern at 11 a.m., and I would be late. I remember looking at that big clock by by Rockefeller Center. Mm-hmm. That's a big name, Rockefeller Center. I can mention that. People will be right?
Yeah, awed just by, add more celebrities
to it. Andrew Weinberg. Yeah, well.
There you go with the Andrew Weinberg. By the way, shout out to Andrew Weinberg, brilliant writer. But from now on, when we mention him on the podcast, he's David Bowie, okay? It just makes it more interesting. So anyway, David Bowie wrote a sketch for the show that you were in, and you and I were in it together, right?
We were in it together, and I had, I don't know how to set it up. I'm going to give away the gag first.
That's okay. It wasn't that funny.
if David Bowie wrote it. Yes. But I came in, and I'm mad at you. I look pregnant in the sketch, okay? So right. One is led to believe, I'm pregnant with your baby.
Right.
Well, the gag is, it's a volleyball. I can't remember exactly what the punchline was.
Trust me, there may not have been a punchline. We did, Ellie, a volume business on Late Night.
You did.
We moved a lot of merchandise. We were there every night cranking up material. And let's not dwell too much on maybe what the gag was, but I'm certain they cast you because you're a redhead. And so I'm certain that they thought, there's this, talented redhead intern on the staff. She's the one who will be Conan's sister, Conan's wife who's way too young for Conan, Conan's, mom
cousin.
Will put old age makeup on her. Whenever a redhead, whenever there was a redhead, that's the level of our imagination, you must now be in a sketch where you play one of Conan's relatives. And by the way, I come from a very large family, and I was the only redhead. No one else had, I had that copper red hair when I was a kid.
I never knew that.
Yeah, and no one else. My dad's got dark hair. My mom had sort of like chestnut brown hair. You can attest to this. I was the only redhead in the family.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, isn't that surprising? Not surprising, because neither of your parents had it, I guess.
And our gardener was a redhead.
Oh.
Dun, 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 dun. And his name was Conan. It's not surprising because I guess it's a very squirrely gene that
yes,
it
is.
So people can have 11 children and all of them can be redheads, or they can have 11 children and one can be a redhead and no one else. You never know. So what's your story? Are you one of many redheads?
I'm one of one.
See?
I am limited edition. Well, yeah, right.
My that's mom, like but me. This is here, why they cast
like you. That's just like what you described. But there's a difference between your story and my story, which is that my mom has red hair. My mom, Dorothy Kemper, has red hair. She's not a name, but I dropped it anyway.
No,
she's a name. She's very famous in our household.
No, she's famous adjacent, so that's fair.
Yes, so that's
but
fair.
Next time you tell, next time you tell a story about your mom, you've got to switch it,
I got it.
And it's got to be Luciano Pavarotti, the famous opera singer. My mom, Pavarotti.
Pavarotti.
Yeah.
She has red hair. I'm one of four. And I have an older brother, a younger sister, and a younger brother. And they're all brown. They're all... Is he a brunette? Or are only women brunettes?
Let's see.
Yeah, I asked the hard
thing. I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I don't know.
I just only think... I just never think about men at all.
I know.
Ever.
I know. Sure. Sure you don't. But yeah, no, I don't know.
I don't want to hold one and be with one, but... What's happening here?
Hey, wait. What?
We went off the rails. Or did we?
Okay.
Maybe this is the real me, finally, at last. So we've talked a little bit about how you interned on the show and then and did some work as a sketch performer.
Yes.
And then the next time I notice you cropping up is on The Office. Is that correct? And I'm sure you did things in between, but...
Commercials.
You did commercials. These were commercials that were widely circulated?
Actually, I have to, apparently not wide enough, but because you aren't familiar with them. But yeah, they were widely circulated. Oh, I was in, yes, they paid the bills. I got a lucky streak of commercials, in fact. But the big job was the one on The Office. That's exactly right. And that was, I think that was about 4 years after interning for you. Yeah.
I really do think Greg Daniels, for a while, he was just... taking the list of my interns and hiring them directly.
I
think that was the level. And because I later on noticed that he didn't even have people working in casting. It was just anybody who had gotten me coffee he was immediately hiring them.
Was on the show.
Yeah. And it seems to have worked. But you played, it's funny because you show up on that program and you felt like you showed up at a time when you felt like, well, they've got everything they need on this show. And your character, Aaron, was great because it was a different take. Your relationship with Michael Scott was different. Yeah. I mean, Dwight Schrute really looked up to Michael, but you idolized Michael in this way that was a different energy than what anyone else was supplying, which I thought was kind of cool.
Very cool. It was a great dynamic. It was great. It was, of course, so fun for me to play because she was in the same universe as Michael Scott, I think, and did see him as a father figure and idolized him in a way that I think, yeah, besides Dwight, no one else really did. And I got... my character entered the story of the show because Pam was being promoted to a salesperson. And right. So a receptionist needed to fill the desk. And it was, anyway, it was a matter of like being in the right place at the right time. And I don't know, being an intern of yours and having that direct pipeline. But that was, of course, like the job of a lifetime. It's you know, all those people. Well, you know, they're great.
It's funny because, first of all, you are so good at playing optimism and uplift and kindness and joy and no guile. You're really good at that. That was just in your wheelhouse for you to idolize this guy who shouldn't be idolized. And that's
right.
That's such a great comedy fountain that they could plug into that, of course, you're not going to get from the Pam character.
Conan, that is... I just have to acknowledge what an enormous compliment that is from you. Thank you. I will remember that for the rest of my life. You can't... just gave me a nice compliment. I think that that's a very that sort of like you said, guileless character hadn't been on the show, and like Michael and Aaron become pals. Like there's an episode called Cafe Disco where it's just Aaron and Michael just downstairs in this sort of homemade coffee shop, just like dancing, just partying, and it's really it was you know, it was a very unique, I think, relationship there. I cried in real life when Steve Carell was leaving the show, which sort of was undeserved because I had only, like, my tears were not, I didn't earn the right sort of to weep over Steve Carell's departure because I wasn't one of the originals. You know, I came in at the end of the fifth season, but I think I felt that a little bit of that dynamic in real life, too. I don't know. It was a sweet relationship there.
This reminds me of Paul Rudd was on the last episode of Friends, the final episode. Mm-hmm. And he's such a horse's ass, but he's on the last episode guest starring, and the show ends, and it's this end of this iconic series, and everybody comes forward for this big bow, and he said, he decided, he just went out and he walked up to the whole cast and he said, "We did it," and gave them a big hug. And he said, they were looking at him kind of like, you know, he was
That's
mustering
so
the same, but you know.
That's me. Yeah.
Well, no, right. You had more right. You were actually in the cast.
I was in the cast of the show.
The perfect person to play Kimmy Schmidt because there's and this is what I think is attractive about this character that you have, this thing that you can access, which is, and I don't know if it comes from the Midwest, but you're able to access real sincerity and good-heartedness that can be played for great comedy, because I think sometimes we're tired of snark and characters we're constantly bombarded with characters who are jaded and with people who have seen it all and done it all and they're rolling their eyes. And for your character to emerge from a bunker after all these years and just be so determined to see the world in a certain way is really nice. I mean, Will Ferrell did it in Elf, and it's I think that is not an easy thing to do. You really did a beautiful job of it.
Well, thank you very much. That show, Kimmy Schmidt, of course, was created by Robert Carlock and Tina Fey, who are masters of comedy writing. And I thought when I read the pilot that this would be very difficult to pull off because it was, you know, essentially a sitcom. But the premise, for anyone who doesn't know, is that it's about a woman who named Kimmy Schmidt who was rescued from a bunker after being kidnapped and held underground for 15 years and emerges with as much optimism and spunk as though the thing had never happened. And it's a testament, I think, to her tenacity and fortitude that she's able to do that. But it is, you know, it's a sincere show, which I think, and it has heart.
I have always had the utmost respect for Tina. Her standard is so high. She is, I think, very tough on herself. And if you look at 30 Rock and you look at the density of the jokes, there's so many of them and they're all so good. And you can tell that they just kept going back at that script and saying,
correct,
there can be more jokes and they can be better. I respect really hard workers. And I think that good stuff comes from hard work. And I don't know if I can think of a harder worker than Tina Fey. She's just determined to make things good. And she has an iron will, you know.
Oh, I know.
And so I was not surprised when Kimmy Schmidt came out. And I could just see the level of the writing is so superb, because I can find myself watching TV sometimes or my kids will steer me to something and I can be a hard ass because I can say, well, they're kind of just getting away on with attitude right now, or they're kind of breaking the rule that I think is important. Yeah. And so I'm really fun to watch TV with.
They look forward to it every night. Let's relax and watch TV with
Dad.
Let's
watch Dad explain to us why this is
why something's funny or bad.
Why this thing we love is shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This thing we thought we were allowed to love, we can't. Of course, you are exactly right. They are the hardest workers I've ever worked with. And those jokes, and now I'm without naming anything specific, since ending that show and going on to work on other stuff, I have such an even greater appreciation of the care that they took to hone every joke. Like you said, I can't imagine how many times they went through each joke to make it just perfect. You know, in a way that I admire, kind of. There was no improv on that set, which I think is great because it's very clear what the instructions are.
Well, I have a theory about improv. Improv can be wonderful. Improv can be wonderful, and it can be a great tool. And obviously, in the right hands, people can improvise wonderful things. I think sometimes, and I mean this as a compliment, but Judd Apatow used some improv in some of his early movies and would encourage it with his actors. But they did it in a very controlled situation with incredibly funny improvisers. I think the problem is that people saw that and said, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Let people improvise. And then I remembered seeing a whole slew of movies that were trying to do that. And I think TV shows where they all thought they were being hilarious. And you realized, you know what? This should have been worked out in a room.
Absolutely. It's a waste of everyone's time and resources. And like you said, sure, if you're going to get a band of world-class improvisers and do a run where they're, you know, if they have a funny idea, okay, good. But most people aren't world-class improvisers and should not improvise. And you might think it's funny in the room when you're shooting it, which it probably is not. And I'm coming out real hard against improvising.
Well, I wanted to try right here. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to edit out the part where I set it up saying I'm tough on improvising. Then we're just going to run the part where you shit on improvising. Then we're going to add another part where I say, hey, take it easy. I think improvisation is wonderful. What's your problem, Ellie Kemper? And and you're just going to look, you're going to look so bad.
Well, I hate improv and I always have. Just no, I'm kidding. There's a time in a place, and usually the time and a place is not on a set.
I'm going to go further. I think all theater is a huge waste of time.
I know. You were so mad when Broadway reopened.
Oh, my God. When Broadway bravely reopened in the face of COVID, I was enraged. And I picketed, remember? I had some band sign.
You had a sign
I said,
everything.
It said, down with theater, and then parentheses, including Shakespeare.
Oh, you specified it.
Yeah, and I very few people were behind me on that stance.
Yeah.
No, I know, but that's why it was all the more courageous, I thought. But no, theater is awful, and it's sad what's happened as they've opened up their doors again. But
Ellie, your yes-anding is just going to go very badly for you. Stop. Stop saying yes, Conan, you're right.
I know.
So I got to mention Bridesmaids, and I'm curious your perspective on the juggernaut that became. I've always sort of really admired that there hasn't been like a Bridesmaids 2. There's something really lovely about deciding, no, we're not going to turn this into make 9 of these.
Conan, what if it was me? I was like, I put my foot down. So I'm glad, it's a joke because I'm such a supporting member. So like, they couldn't have possibly made it without me.
Well, you know,
they,
you did. Like, it was you. I read about this. It was you. And they said, we can't, she has red hair and this needs to be a redhead. And then they came to me.
Oh, they, yeah,
and they said, would I dress as you? And I had your back. I said, yes, I will. Yes, I will. And I'll do it for a lot less money. I just need to be in a movie.
You know, it's a story not many people know about, but now I hope, you know, the listeners will continue to spread what actually happened. I agree with you. Of course, I have nothing to do with the decisions to make a sequel, but I personally, and I hope it's okay to go on record agreeing with you yet again, which is that it's special in its own way. It was a really, I thought it came out so near perfectly almost. And it was not, you know, at the time, a lot of the questions were about females being funny, and I believe one quote was, it's a chick flick that doesn't suck. I don't know who, but maybe that was just my dad. I'm kidding. He doesn't talk like
I've
that.
I've always hated your father. the absurdity, first of all, it's a discovery that's been made hundreds of thousands of times before Bridesmaids.
Over and over. I know. I feel like Christopher Hitchens had just written his thing. I think it was all in the zeitgeist, and so it was something for journalists to ask about. But I...
You mean, how does it feel to be women who are funny in a funny movie? And
Surprised?
Not realizing how incredibly condescending that is.
Oh, just the question alone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo wrote the script, and they wanted to tell a story about a woman getting married and how that makes her friends feel. And that was the story they wanted to tell. And it involved a lot of women. And that was, you know, by chance, I guess. I mean, they didn't set out to like write a feminist manifesto or anything like that. And I think that, you know, in certain cases, maybe sequels are, I can't come up with one right now. Oh, Paddington 2 is a good sequel.
Oh, Paddington 2 is, I'm not doing a joke here. I happen to know this for a fact, considered, I think it's the highest rated movie on Rotten Tomatoes ever.
Yep.
It used to be Citizen Kane. And then, I'm not kidding, they found an early review of Citizen Kane that was unfavorable, and it tipped the scales in favor of Paddington 2.
So are you serious?
No, and
I didn't know that.
My kids told me about it, and I said, wait, we're going to sit and watch Paddington 2? And this is, I think, 2 years ago. It was during COVID.
Yeah.
And I had a little bit of a, what is this? We're going to watch Paddington 2?
Oh,
don't
no.
I need to have seen Paddington 1? And why are we even watching? Is it a bear? Why would I be? And I actually had grown a big walrus mustache, and I was wearing a vest and a top hat. Why are we going to watch? And my kids said, it's a perfect movie. I sat down and I watched this thing, and I will attest to all my listeners that Paddington 2, it's one of the best crafted movies I've ever seen. I'm not saying that with any irony. I'm not saying that like wink, wink.
No. Nope.
You know, it is a perfect movie, Paddington 2.
It's fantastic. Let me ask, have you seen Paddington 1?
I have not.
I've almost had it. It's also very good.
I hear it's really good too. I just happen to know that Paddington 2 has this aura about it. I'm almost afraid to watch 1 now because if it has the slightest flaw,
I know.
I'll be like, wait, you know, you just showed me a Fabergé egg and now you're showing me a ham sandwich.
I don't disagree with that choice, but it's fantastic. Hugh Grant is so good.
Yes,
in that movie.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Did you stay to watch the credits with his dance routine?
Oh,
I think.
What are you talking about? Of course, I stayed to watch the credits because my children make sure I see every second of everything.
Right.
Because the Marvel movies have taught my children always stay through all the credits. There might be something special that happens, and that only I've so many times seen them disappointed. Because we've stayed and watched all the credits to Shawshank Redemption, and nobody's dancing. You know, they don't reunite everybody that was killed horribly in the movie, and they do a dance at the end. But to bring it back around, Bridesmaids is one of those films that anytime it comes on, I want to say I have about 11 of these. Anytime it comes on, and I'm with my wife, that's what we're watching.
I say this because here's what I felt like, kind of an audience member in the airplane scene when Kristen has taken I guess an anti-anxiety pill.
Yeah.
I can't. And so she's that whole scene was like watching, you know, world-class show, a comedy show right before me. So when I say that I enjoy watching it, of course, no one likes to watch him or herself on. I mean, I don't think so. Do people like to watch themselves on camera? It's weird.
It's not.
Whatever.
I know some people who love to watch themselves. I am not one, but I do know comedians.
I want to know, but you don't have to say it. I mean, why would you say them? Maybe you're about to.
Okay. I love the guy, but whenever, but John Lovitz, God love him. Whenever I was around him and they were, and they were rerunning one of his sketches, he'd be like, look at that. Quiet, everybody. Quiet.
No.
And I love him for it. He loves to see himself and he is
unabashedly kind of.
Yes. And then he'll watch himself be really funny. And then he'll turn to the rest of us and go, jealous. And
if he were doing it secretly, it would be so much worse.
Yeah.
So, okay. Then that's fine. And so watching that, just Melissa McCarthy, everyone in that show and that movie is brilliant. And nobody was like, I think everybody was recognizable to well known, but there were no, how do I say this politely? I don't think anybody was like, is this okay to say? Like, uber instantly recognizable superstar.
Yes. And then after that movie, obviously everybody was elevated. But it is, we're so gender conscious and race conscious. And there's a lot that's good about that and really good mm-hmm. about that. And, mm-hmm. and, but when something like Bridesmaids happens, it can feel disappointing when people say, see,
yeah.
isn't this interesting
that
women, when they gather their forces, you feel like, do we need to do this? Can't we just accept that Lucille Ball was killing it in 1951?
Yeah. Without that being a talking point or issue. And
right.
I feel like, not to throw them under the bus, but they're terrible people. Anyway, I feel like the people who sent me an email or mentioned how funny Bridesmaids was back in 2011, I guess, when it came out. They were like finance guys. I mean, don't ask me why I'm getting all these emails from finance guys. We'll talk about that later. But they were.
Well, there was
like
a while where you were. First of all, I'll be honest. You put it out there that you wanted to marry a very wealthy man.
I know.
And you did.
I made no secret about it.
Yeah, and you would go on talk shows. And I remember you doing the talk show circuit and saying, before we begin, if there are any finance guys out there, I'd like to hear from you and send your portfolio along.
I would set it up. Well, or I would ask the host to set it. Either way,
you had me start by saying, I'd list your credits and what you had done. And then you'd say her goal is to meet a man who has at least $600 million liquid. And it was always liquid.
That was like with underlined. I feel like if it's not liquid, I'm not interested, And so it had to be liquid.
It was a very weird intro.
I want to think people got used to it. I don't know if they did. But I did get a lot of emails from finance guys. It's bros.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
You guys, this movie's so funny. And yet.
Yeah. But there's no. The John Lovitz or what, and it's like, no, it's just
jealous.
Do bros love
are
John
you jealous? Lovitz? I don't think bros are like, whoa. Lovitz is one of the funniest people I know,
but I don't think bros
are high fiving each other. I don't think they're dropping their lacrosse sticks and high fiving each other and going, whoa, Lovitz, dude. Let's do shots with Lovitz. Hello, fellas.
Right.
Jealous. No, we have to talk about something. If there's one thing that if we don't talk about this,
I know
it's going to be a problem. But I'm going to talk about a writer. I know I swore to not talk about people there's a writer on my show who I love dearly, and mm-hmm. he's hilarious and brilliant. And I'm going to say all these very nice things about him. His name's Michael Komen, and the thing about him is that I was so comfortable with Michael Komen, and he used to, in my defense, he used to taunt me sometimes and get his face in mine and say things that he knew would infuriate me. Yeah. So I would often wrestle with this writer named Michael Coman. And maybe there was a time where I took my belt off and tried to chased him around and tried to whip him with my belt. My point is, listen, that's neither here nor there. And
I
didn't admit to anything. I said it's possible that something like that happened. The thing is, this guy ends up meeting, falling in love with, and marrying none other than Ellie Kemper. So Ellie Kemper is married to this guy, Michael Coman. And because I've always had kind of a, he's like my younger brother. I tease him, I wrestle him, I adore him. He's brilliant. I've always been in awe of his talent, but I always have to get into it with him. And so there have been times where I've been talking to you on my late night show, and I start to go off on this terrible writer named Michael Coman, who's a complete fool and an ass. And the audience doesn't know that I'm doing it as a loving joke to him.
And you
play along and go, oh my God, yeah, that guy's horrible. You will throw your own husband under the bus to play.
It's terrible, but not terrible, because I also see him as a younger brother. I'm kidding.
Please tell me that you've hit him with your belt. Please tell me.
Here's the thing. He is deserving of a whipping. I think he is ridiculous in the same ways that you think of. And honestly, I think, so I love the dynamic that, you had this dynamic before I entered, before I knew either of
this
you,
is,
I think.
Yeah, this is, I will tell you a true story. Michael. We were out in LA doing live shows, late night shows, I think in LA, and we were in the parking lot in the valley of a deli about to go in and eat food. And of course, Michael and I are roughhousing. We're adults. We're adult men. And I'm a known adult man. And I'm roughhousing with him in the parking lot. And he grabs my shirt, which was a brand new shirt that I liked. No. And he pulled on it and he tore it. So I chased him, caught him, tore his shirt to shreds so that he was completely naked.
Oh, no.
From the waist up. In a parking lot, in a parking lot in the valley on Ventura. And then he had to get back in his rental car and drive home with, and it looked like he was a naked man driving. This is the relationship I have with this guy. And then he marries the beautiful, famous, and talented Ellie Kemper. And
I feel like a portrait of good class and manner. Yeah.
And I feel like, do I have to change the way I behave now that he's married Ellie? Do I have to change the way I behave around Michael Coman? And then I realized I didn't to this day. And he's so talented and he's gone on to do such great stuff. He's going to win an Oscar. And when I see him and he's holding his Oscar for writing some screenplay, I'm going to tackle him and throw and then I'm going to throw the Oscar in the sewer. And then he's going to tackle me and retrieve the Oscar and beat me with a sewage covered Oscar.
Oh my God.
Well, I couldn't agree. I mean, I don't know why that relationship between the two of you brings me such joy. As you know, or I guess I've surmised, he adores you and loves you. And I think that when
he has to, or I'll kill him.
Well, he has to. It's true. It's not entirely by choice. So that's what that setup is. Oh, by the way, I said, what message do you have for Conan? And he said to give him my, this is Michael speaking, please give him my love and begrudging respect.
Nice. There we go. You.
Very nice. There it goes. But it is, I don't know, because did that start from day one?
Like probably not from day one, but your husband, he's a very good looking guy, but he wears glasses and he knew how to get under my skin in kind of a comedic way, but he would get right in my face and sometimes pitch an intentionally bad idea with a big grin, as if like taunting a mad dog.
And then
I would lose it and go after him. And then, of course, I am myself a mentally unbalanced person who grew up in a large family with a lot of issues. And so I'm guilty of many, many crimes.
Sure.
And so there are many times when he didn't deserve anything, and yet I would chase him down the hallway and tackle him and remove my belt and start to pretend to whip him with it.
Pretend.
No one was really hurt.
Really?
I mean, nothing really that didn't hurt. Heal up after
a couple
of weeks.
No, I, Michael, I mean, it is an unusual, I don't know that I've seen that play out as much.
Oh, it's illegal. Know, that's why you haven't seen it. It's illegal.
It's against the law.
It's illegal. And there's a reason.
Yeah.
No one else is
well,
doing
and I
it.
Wish you guys lived in the same city so we could see you more and you could, you know, get into more physical matches because
I will fly. At my own expense, I will fly to wherever you are.
Yep.
I will charter a flight. I will do whatever it takes. I will walk across the United States if I have to.
Yep.
But I will wrestle your husband to the ground in front of you, and I will pour a cold oatmeal on his head. And it'll be out of love.
Now, I hope I can mention, it involves Michael, who we've just been talking about, but one of my favorite sketches of all time is when you, and tell me if this is not something, whatever, but when you went to his apartment,
yes.
They just let you right up, when Michael, again, like, allegedly called it, or he did call
him
sick.
He did, yeah, you can look this up online, Michael Komen, and you can see the famous Michael Komen, the now infamous Michael Komen. He called in one day saying that he wasn't well and he couldn't come to work. And we were a little suspicious. Like, is he really not sick?
I know.
Or did he just?
No.
So we grabbed a camera crew and we drove down into the village.
Yeah.
And you see me. This is, you know, whatever. I don't know, 2004, 2001. Who knows? It was a long time ago.
Long time ago.
But I go up the stairs. I talk to his super. I get in there.
They let you right in.
And
they didn't ask any questions.
Yeah, exactly. The super should not have let me in, but they let me right in.
Yeah.
I take the elevator up. I go into his apartment, and I am really quizzing him on if he's is he really that sick.
Yeah.
And it's kind of compelling to watch because I think we nailed him. I don't think he was sick enough.
Are you kidding me? I can tell from... No, he was not sick. He doesn't even... He sounds a little stuffed up. And this is way before COVID. Like, this wasn't before, I want to keep my community safe. This was him being a little tired, not having any responsibilities except his job, which he completely just, bailed on.
Yeah, thank you.
And then, furthermore, you brought him to the show. If he was well enough to get in a car and go to the show, he was not... He wasn't even in bed when you got there.
Right. No, we totally nailed him. Of course, none of these things, as I said, in the COVID era, none of this dates very well. Because the idea that someone said, I don't feel well, I'm not coming to work, and I drove and made them come to a studio taping. Again, I believe that's illegal.
Those were the days. So, I know. It is.
Yeah. I know. It's shocking that I'm not in prison. Now, you've done this, do I call it a reboot?
You're not supposed to say that.
No, no, okay.
No, you can. Yeah.
I don't know what I'm
instructed.
Did they instruct you? Because we can take that out. I can go like this. Tell us, Home Sweet Home Alone. Tell us about this. Tell me about Home Sweet Home Alone.
Home Sweet Home Alone is a reimagining of the... Home Alone movies of the 90s, the ones with Macaulay Culkin. Mm-hmm. And in it, Rob Delaney and I get to play this pair of parents who are essentially the burglars. And so we get to break into this kid's house because we think he's stolen something very valuable from our house. And we need this valuable thing because we need to sell it to pay off the mortgage on our house. So we're actually good people trying to,
Right. You're not the sort of cartoon villains. Right.
No. No. So we get very beaten up by this kid played by Archie Yates, who was in Jojo Rabbit. I don't know if
he's great.
That.
I love Jojo Rabbit.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's great in this movie, too. And he's a kid, but he's great. Well, come on. He's a
kid. Can you imagine a kid could be good at something?
It's here to...
What if you had cast... What if they had cast Macaulay Culkin? who's currently 54 years old and has on his third hip. He's limping
around. We couldn't
find
anyone else. He was the only one.
That is really lazy casting.
Lazy casting.
And they put him in one of those like really bad fake kid outfits. Like a Lord Fauntleroy short pants, giant lollipop.
Yeah.
He's clearly
go with it.
He's shaving during parts of it.
How adorable is he, by the way? Though, have you seen the John Hughes Home Alone many times or no?
Yes,
I have. I've seen it many.
Yeah,
it's such a good movie.
Oh yeah,
and he's so good in it. Macaulay Culkin. Why have I made this podcast all about my love for Macaulay Culkin? Very suddenly took a 180, and I can't get.
I love you're
of
trying
Macaulay
to get
Culkin
people to turn out for a movie that everyone has seen 100 times.
Yeah, I know.
Titanic. I mean, have you seen
it? You gotta give it a chance.
It's fantastic.
But this is this is the newest installment in the Home Alone franchise, and it's called Home Sweet Home Alone. The only thing that I think is unusual about this movie is that the Archie is, of course, British, and his mom is British. It's never really brought up. Their dad, Archie's dad, is played by Andy Daly.
Yes.
I think you know.
I know and revere Andy Daly.
Of course you do. He's like
one of the funniest people ever. Also,
yeah. One of the funniest people ever. And I got to do one day with him because of how everything shook out. And it was like such an honor and joy.
So why is it weird that he's British? If
Andy has an American accent.
Oh.
And the No, I'm saying it is unusual. He has an American accent. I'm not doing a good job promoting this because I'm pointing out an immediate flaw. No, it's just something I find interesting.
Sure.
A discussion.
Tell us about other flaws with this project you're promoting.
You know, there's not a lot of plot. No, I'm kidding. There's a great plot.
That'd be great.
It doesn't hold together. Story.
It really doesn't hold together.
No, it falls apart by the 40-minute mark. No. And one great thing. Now I'm going to bring up the original again. It's the John Williams. They use the John Williams score, which I didn't know they were going to until I actually saw it. And it's really beautiful. I hope that, you know, I just hope people like it. You shouldn't compare the two because it's its own thing. But
no, they shouldn't compare it to the original Home Alone, but they should compare it to Paddington 2.
Yeah, well.
And then you decide which is the superior film.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's only
Paddington
fair.
Paddington 2 is flawless. I know. It doesn't hold a candle to Paddington 2. And you can quote me on that.
You want that to be the pull quote? No, I'm sure. I'm going to check it out.
No, check it out. See what you think, and then you'll text me. I don't know what you'll do.
I've known you for many years, and I've known you to always be a lovely person. I know it's hard for you to talk to me since I really created you, in my opinion.
Yes, you did.
Formed you out of clay.
No, I know.
You know, if I hadn't given you that internship, I think you'd be scraping barnacles off of old garbage scows right now for a living. But it was all me. It all turned on me.
It was all you.
And I think Tina Fey maybe did a little bit.
No,
I think I did far more.
It was you.
And so I wish you nothing but goodness. And
you're right back to you. All joking aside, I revere you. You have such a special place in my. Well, now it's coming out.
I always engineer it so that there's no way to compliment me.
I know. No, but anyway, I just adore you. So, and it's been such a pleasure talking with you.
Well, let's hang sometime. I really do want to hang with you sometime. And I do consider you a friend. And I want you to bring your husband.
Yeah.
And I will beat the living daylights out of him in front of you. And
I am so happy we got to talk about him.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to bring it up, but I'm really glad that we.
Ellie, I hope I see you soon. And thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I just had a blast. So thank you. And thank you, Sona. Thanks, guys.
Hey, guys, let's do some voicemails. Check in with the people. What do you say?
It's always good. I'm like a king that dresses up as common folk and goes out among the villagers to hear what they're saying about the great leader. Let's hear from the folk.
Okay, Sammy, take it away.
Hey, Conan. This is Santosh Matthew, and I was just wondering, if you could give birth to any animal, not including humans, what would it be?
My first answer would be something very small.
Yeah.
Smart.
Yeah. I mean, Sony, you just had twins. I want it to be something quite small, not something that's going to kill me during childbirth.
And it's going to, sorry to get technical, but it comes off out of the urethra and not like the butthole, right?
I don't want to get specific.
Okay.
And well, I think
it's important that we do.
Do you poop it out or do you pee it out?
Well, this is putting me in an awkward position, but I'm going to say it's a buttocks birth.
Good. We're clear.
So, okay, we're clear. And the butt, as it's designed to for men by Mother Nature, it separates and plenty of space is made during male birth. Anywho.
Yeah.
People do say that about you, that you have birthing buttocks.
I get that a lot. People come up and slap me on the ass and say, you've got nice, wide birthing buttocks.
Yeah.
And I say, thank you. I'm going to say it needs to be small. So at first I was thinking like, what's the smallest animal? But now that I'm remembering that when the male gives birth, the buttocks separate and there's plenty of room. I love a baby grizzly. They're so adorable.
What?
They're gorgeous. Have you seen little baby grizzly bears?
Yes.
They're adorable. Oh. They're wonderful. And I love bears. I just love bears. So I'm going to say a very small baby grizzly I wish would come out.
A
and
then premature I can play. Baby grizzly.
Well, don't get creepy. It's fine. It's
I'm
lungs
getting
are
creepy.
Its lungs are fully developed. It's fine. It's just a little on the small side. It's a little underweight, but it's not a painful birth.
Okay.
It's going to be painful.
Yeah.
No matter how much you expand, it's going to be painful.
No, I'm going to have an epidural. I'm
going
to have all the medication.
It still makes it hurt a little bit, I'm sure.
When my wife was giving birth to our daughter, she was in incredible pain, and she was freaking out. I mean, she was just in a lot of pain. And then someone finally said, let's give her an epidural. And my wife said, yes, please do that. And so they ushered me out of the room. They brought whatever the equipment was or whatever into the room. I came in 5 minutes later, and my wife was flipping through a Vogue magazine. And she was like, oh, hello. And I swear to God, she had makeup on appeared, and her hair was done. And she was like, oh, hi, how are you? Would you like an appletini? You know, it was incredible, the transformation. So I'm going to get whatever that was.
Yeah.
I'm going to get that, and I'm going to be in the hospital bed. My buttocks will separate. I won't feel it. And a baby grizzly will walk out and go, Papa, Papa.
Already talking.
Yeah, it's talking already. Wow. They learn to speak very quickly.
I guess we're burying the lead by not saying congratulations to you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Congrats on your baby bear.
Butt bear.
My buttocks baby bear.
Your baby cub.
My baby cub. And the people say, was it a buttocks birth? And I go, yeah, buttocks, buttocks birth of the baby grizzly. They're gorgeous. Go check out baby grizzlies. They're just lovely. Now, the problem is that within a year, they can tear your throat out.
Yes.
Show it to you. And then wipe their ass with it. But I will, I'll take that chance. I'll take that chance.
Good.
Just to have that experience.
I don't know. Just because it's cute, you want to risk getting your throat cut off? I don't know if I would do that.
Well, no one's asking you. Oh. This is, you know what I mean?
Okay. Well,
this
I'm
is
on
a
the
male
podcast.
Buttocks birth. Oh. You women couldn't possibly know what we men go through.
Oh.
You have no idea what we go through.
Wow.
You with your vaginal canals. It's so easy. Try birthing a grizzly through your buttocks and then come back and tell me that the system's unfair.
You're right. Sorry. Yeah. What was I thinking?
Men have been getting the shaft for so long.
You poor things.
Yeah, and then we have to get right back to work. Anywho, I think we have our answer here. I want to thank this gentleman for thinking of, I think that's the oddest question we've had yet.
Yes.
It's pretty odd.
Pretty freaking weird. It's created some violent imagery, but also I think wonderful possibilities for a future where men bring little baby cubs into the world and then have an ice pack on their butts for at least 6 months afterwards.
A donut.
Yeah. They sit on. They sit on a donut. Yeah. Awful. What a terrible podcast. I blame everyone involved.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sona Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Beckton. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.